I will tell you as soon as there is."
Oates did his best to put some gratitude on his face and let her go.
"Let's see if the two of us can get you propped up," Thistle said.
They managed. Barely. Oates had to close his eyes for a spell until the worst of the tide receded from his skull. When he opened them, Thistle was sitting on the bed beside him, a wooden bowl and spoon at the ready. Oates wrinkled his nose. "Anything else?" The look he received was admonishing.
"No."
"At least let me do it." Thistle placed the bowl in his hands. The numbness in his right arm extended to the fingers, and he fumbled the spoon. He switched to his left, but that was quaking before halfway to his mouth. Oates dropped the spoon back into the bowl and swore. Thistle took them from him without a word. She waited. "I'm sorry," Oates mumbled.
"For?"
"For this."
She leaned down, forced him to look at her. "For being injured? Oates, you know that's no cause."
What he knew and what he felt weren't riding the same hog, but he didn't try to explain. Instead, he nodded. Thistle raised the spoon.
"Now, I can't promise this won't wind up in your beard, but..."
Carefully, she guided the spoon past his lips. The sticky sweetness of the honey made Oates grimace. He swallowed it down and made a noise. "Never mind. I don't need to eat."
"One more."
"What about just bread and gravy?" Thistle narrowed her eyes at him. "Porridge?" The spoon lifted. Oates opened his mouth and survived the next assault.
"Now."
Thistle stood, went and put the bowl down.
"I can give you two choices for the pain. One is a tea. Bitter as a widow's stare, but it will ease the aches and make you sleep. Or,"
her eyes brightened as a smile spread across her face,
"I can allow you a visitor. Someone who is very keen on seeing you."
Oates's heart lifted, but he stamped it down and murdered his own smile before it could form. "No. Seeing me like this, it would only scare him." Thistle's smile faded into concern.
"He's more scared you're going to die, Oates."
"Then tell him I'm not."
"We've been telling him that for 4 days.
"Just let me get on my feet first. Tomorrow, I'll..." Thistle took a patient breath.
"Oates, you're not going to be out of that bed tomorrow. Might not be for a span. He needs to see you. He's having nightmares."
Oates unclenched his jaw. He'd been grinding his teeth. I don't look scary." Thistle shook her head and replied softly.
"You don't look scary."
Oates nodded, took his own steadying breath. "All right, then."
"I'll get him," Thistle said.
She was gone a little longer this time. Oates made sure none of his wounds were visible, that the bandages weren't bled through. He smoothed the sheet, his beard, best he could. The door opened again.
"Oates!"
Murrow rushed across the room. The little boy wasn't afraid. He didn't even pause before jumping up onto the bed and flinging himself into Oates's arms.
"You here? Not dead,"
Murrow said, his muffled voice high with glee and thick with tears.
"You here? Not dead."
Oates stroked the back of his dark head. "I'm here. I ain't dead." He hugged the boy tight and rocked him, kissed his hair. The weight of the embrace pressed his wounds, but he didn't care. Oates looked up at Thistle, watching with a quivering smile. She was right. This was the antidote to all pain. Chapter 9. Murrow favored his mother.
He had the same lopsided grin that conjured a lone dimple, the same ears pinching at the lobes toward the jaw. Likely she would have remained alive in the boy's eyes as well, but one was cocked now, making his stare entirely his own. Oates wondered if there was any of Murrow's father in him. He'd never seen the man. Some traveling minstrel ousted from the courts up north, Murrow's mother claimed, though it was doubtful she knew for certain. The whores always tried to have a likely poke ready to name when Sancho asked. If the elected man ever came back through, the whoremonger was quick to press them for more coin to aid in the child's upkeep. Funny how the men that put babes in whores' bellies always seemed to be those weak enough to be bullied by the likes of Sancho. Not that the mothers ever saw a single piece of the coerced shine. Murrow certainly didn't. Her singer never came back to the brothel, far as Oates knew, and she was dead within a year of giving birth, one of two laid low by a tinkerer from Guabia flush with coin and some hidden putrescence. The other woman had lived, though the disease had left her face so hideously scarred that Sancho cast her out, uncaring that her mind had been eaten away along with her nose. Oates had been freshly sworn back then, a gray bastard, still riding his first hog, gorgeous. Queer to think that Murrow was older than Ugfuck. Sometimes he remembered it wrong, familiarity with the present infecting the past. He'd think back on that day he'd first held Murrow and recall Jackal being with him, when, in truth, it was old Creep. They'd ridden up and found no one in the stable to take their hogs. The brothel shuddered. Sancho only unbarred the door after they'd threatened to break it down. He'd already driven the disfigured whore into the Badlands. The dead one was shut up in a room, her squalling child inside with her. Sancho feared the boy was afflicted and refused anyone entry. Two of his girls had split lips and black eyes from trying to get to the boy. Delia was one of them. But the fat whoremaster couldn't send Oates off with a strop. He'd burst into the room, lifted Murrow away from the corpse, and wouldn't put him down. Not when Delia offered to take him, not when Creep asked for help burying the mother, not even when the boy finally stopped crying. They stayed a day longer than they were supposed to. Oates didn't want to leave until he was certain Murrow would be safe. He'd been so green back then, hardly more than a slop. He had size and strength, but what good were those once he was back at the kiln? Creep sorted it, in the end. The old mongrel was already blind in one eye, his hearing was going, and his joints creaked louder than the thrum cord when he pulled it back. Still, he'd made Sancho open his mouth, put the head of the bolt right inside. "You think that child ain't going to live? You best tell me to pull this tickler now," Creep said. "Because I can promise you, fat man, that getting throat-fucked by this here quarrel will be a kindness compared to what my young thrice-blood brother will do to you if and he don't. My days of whoring are just about done, but this'un, full of spend. So you can well wager he'll be here frequent. That babe ain't hale, hearty, and plumper than you every single time Oates comes to get his iron wet. Well, you think that's an eventuality, nod your head, and I'll mercy murder you this damn instant." Murrow was thriving when Oates returned the following month. And he was thriving now. For a week, he rushed in and out of Oates's room with a new treasure to show. A coin, a leaf, a flute whittled for him by one of the Zaracenes, the husk of a cicada. Thistle said he had an entire collection of wonders tucked away in their chambers, but Murrow wouldn't bring the entire basket at once. Each had to be presented one at a time, in a specific sequence only the boy knew. Oates feared Murrow was going to wear himself out with all the running up and down the stairs of the keep, but there was no bottom to his vigorous need to share all he'd discovered. "He'll sleep well again tonight," Thistle mused, after Murrow raced from the room to fetch the third wonder of the day. Oat shook his head and chuckled. Wish I could summon that much joy over a broken bit of chain. He came back with an arm's length of match cord about a month ago, Thistle said. That had to go missing in case he stuck it in a candle flame.
And how'd that go? It going missing?
Thistle continued to tear the latest batch of fresh bandages. He hasn't noticed yet. But in another month, he could be crying over it.
Oates laughed again. He looks good with his hair grown.
Well, he gets a bath regular now, so the lice aren't a concern like they were in the state.
Thistle stopped herself, used the ripping of the linen to cover the sudden halt in her words.
Oates pretended not to notice. The Castile stable master had been a cruel fuck to all his charges, but he heaped the largest pile of abuse on the simple-minded boy. Murrow was free of him now. He had a mother again, and, to his knowledge, for the first time.
No surprise you've done so well with him, Oates said, and felt a sudden need to clear his throat. No surprise, but I reckon it still needs to be said.
Thistle kept her eyes fixed on the growing stack of bandages, but her industrious movements slowed a little.
He's a joy.
Oates watched her from the pen that was Bermudo's massive bed.
If I didn't say before I left, thank you for taking care of him.
You said,
Thistle replied with the touch of a smile.
Good, but that was before. Now that you've done it, been through the winter and all, reckon it bears repeating. So, thank you. Again.
I volunteered, Oates. You don't owe me anything.
Certainly didn't deserve having me to look to on top of him.
Volunteered for that, too?
Thistle moved around to the bedside. Come, we can get your arm dressing changed before he gets back.
Oates complied. He could actually raise his arm to aid with that task now, though the feeling hadn't entirely returned to his fingers. I just don't want you to think I'm an ingrate, he said, as Thistle worked.
I don't think that.
Her hand movements quickened, removing the old bandages. It could have been simply that she didn't want Murrow to come back with the wounds exposed. He was sensitive to such sights. But Oates worried there was also a spark of irritation in her hurry. Had he upset her somehow? He hadn't meant to. Perhaps it was like her not wanting to mention the stables, thinking it would anger him. Perhaps he'd trodden on a tender matter, mentioning her taking charge of Murrow. She'd sacrificed much to do it. All Winsome's orphans had been hers to shelter, and now she had just the one boy. Fetch had sent the rest away, knowing the Castile would be in the eye of the storm when his Sparta brought their armies and open war to the lots. Mongrel's cradle, on the southern coast, was as far removed from the border as they could get, with the sea as an avenue of escape should it come to the worst. But Murrow had refused to go. He'd flown into a fit at the notion of leaving the Castile. The place had been a hell for him, but it was his home. He didn't remember the brothel, far as Oates knew. He'd been but 4 when he left there, and injured besides, skull broke and hardly alive. So the Castile was what he knew.
Where you find me, Odes? Where you find me?
That was all they could understand through the wailing. Beryl had said they should simply put the boy in the wagon, that he would get beyond his grief long before they reached the cradle. And that had made Oates's mind. Murrow should stay. Oates loved his mother, but she had her ways. They weren't always altogether kind, not on the surface, leastways. Raising scores of mongrel foundlings, Beryl's tough-as-hide discipline worked. Part of her duty was to groom them for the hoof. Oates had no complaints about the way he came up, the way Jackal and Fetch and Culprit and dozens of others came up. But for Murrow, no. There was no future in a hoof for him, and not only because he was a frail. He had difficulties that Beryl would think she could cure by ignoring them. She'd never mistreat him, not ever, but neither would she treat him differently than any of the others. Oates reckoned there was a better way, though he didn't know what exactly it was, and neither did he know how he was going to confess it to his mother's face. Fortunately, like Creep had done nearly 9 years before, Thistle did it for him. She wanted to stay, she'd said. The Sons of Perdition would have a wet nurse at the cradle for their foundlings, and her milk was dried up regardless. With Beryl back, there was no need for her to go, not when she could be of use here. Murrow could stay at the Castile under her care. Still, it had not been an easy parting. Milk or no, those children had all been Thistle's to look after during the toughest shit Winsome's people had ever endured. And yet she bade them all farewell, kissed them, and helped lift them into a wagon so they could ride through the gate and out of her life, possibly forever. All for one boy she barely knew. One boy who didn't care a fig that she stayed because he only wanted Oates. For as hard as Murrow cried at the thought of leaving the Castile, for all the shouted, unintelligible protests, it was nothing compared to the ear-splitting sorrow that racked the boy upon hearing Oates was going away to the mountains. Nothing said could penetrate that pure, wild anguish. All Oates could do was bite down on the inside of his mouth, drawing blood to ward against his own tears, and mount up, while Thistle kept Murrow from following, suffering the blows of his thrashing limbs. Oates hadn't known what to expect when he returned, from either of them. He tried not to think of them at all during his time in the Smelteds. It was easy at the start, during those first weeks when he and Anvil took over the Pit of Homage, spewing threats and spilling blood. After, when the slavers were gone, and Jacinto's men were escorting mule trains of ancient imperial gold into the lots, Oates had little to occupy his mind. Murrow's screams woke him on the nights he managed to sleep. But this morning, and the six before, it was the boy's laughter that snatched him from slumber. "Is he only happy because I'm back?" Oates ventured. It had been a gnawing worry. Thistle was finishing with the fresh bandage. Good thing, too, because his arm was faltering.
"He's happier," Thistle answered. "But no, he's not been wholly miserable these last months."
"And you?"
Thistle shrugged as she tied the bandage off.
"I'm well."
"You look better than you did," Oates said.
The way Thistle's eyes jerked up made him regret the words the next instant.
"I mean, none of us had had much to eat since last I was here, so you were thin."
"I was thin?"
"Right, but now you've filled out again, like the way you were before. So you look good."
Oates realized with horror that he'd made a certain double-handed gesture there at the end, one that could be best described as miming ample handfuls of something.
"Just saying, I think it's good when people look the way they ought," he blurted. "Like themselves. You seen Jackal? All them dune-lover robes and scarves? And the chief with her tyne coif? They don't look like they ought, like how I think of them in my head from the past. So if they were to change back, if Jack were to wear a brigand and breeches again like a damn mongrel should, and Fetch were to quit razoring the sides of her scalp, then I'd say to them, 'You look better.' Same as I did, just now. With you."
Thistle stared at him blankly for a long, long spell. Murrow came running to his rescue, brandishing a falcon's feather. Oates didn't get to see the bird itself for close to a fortnight. Turned out not to be a falcon at all, but an eagle, the pride of Tarif Abu Nassar, Sheikh of the Zahrasines. The man exercised his hunter in the spacious yard of the Castile, sending it from his gloved wrist to soar and swoop, calling it back again. Murrow laughed and clapped, marveling open-mouthed and tensing with excitement. He'd not been able to remain seated next to Oates on the stairs of the keep once the eagle took wing. Though his body was incapable of sitting still, the spasms and tics that ever played upon his face were calmed by his rapt attention to the bird's flight. He could have watched all day, fervor never flagging. Oates nudged the boy with his knuckle.
What did you think of the chief's big bird? The one that she rides?
Murrow jerked away as if he'd been scalded, his eyes going wide, arms drawing close to his chest. He shook his head.
No!
Oates was careful to keep his reaction small.
Too big? Too scary?
A frantic nod.
I like to have filled my britches first time I saw it, too, Oates said.
He pointed back to Tarif.
Look, he's going again.
Murrow turned, and the next instant his fear was forgotten. Oates took a long, slow breath. The halting plod down the stairs had nearly done for him, but Hafsa had declared him ready after days of finding his legs in the corridor. The Zahrasin healer still insisted Oates lean upon her pair of burly assistants, however, and made certain Alamra's translation properly conveyed she was not to be trifled with on the matter. Oates wasn't about to fight her. The sight of his own feet beneath a coverlet had grown tiresome weeks ago, and he was determined to be rid of Bermudo's damn bedroom, to see Ugfuck. He'd accomplished the first, but even with aid, Oates was sweating after half a dozen steps, and the descent took an age. He'd needed to rest a span, so he'd ended up on his ass at the bottom of the stairs. Sitting on stone was far from a comfort, but at least he was closer to the ground should his light head send him into a fucking swoon. The Zahrasins waited behind him. Oates would have felt less judged if they'd made some jests at his feebleness like his hoof brothers would have done. Instead, they were silent and patient as spiders. Oates didn't have a word of Urjar, and Alamra had other duties than to dog his decrepit outing. Thistle knew some of the tongue, but she had used his absence as an opportunity to clean the chamber. The woman never took a moment of ease. Unlike Oates, his life was molded by sloth now. Tarif's hawking did little to distract him from the pain, the quivering, and the weakness. Still, it was pleasant to sit in the breeze of the afternoon. It struck him, cruel as a punch to the cods, that he wouldn't be able to see Ugg today. This was as far as he could go. What strength he recovered would be needed for the return up the stairs, and even that he feared would conquer him. The Zahrasins might need to employ a litter. The only thing worse than that thought was the knowledge that he was growing comfortable with the necessity of such help, grateful for it in earnest. Oates looked to the sky. The roke may have frightened Murrow, but Oates yearned for a sign of the chief. There was still no word from her or Jackal. He blinked when Tarif stepped into view, his hooded eagle perched on his hand.
Hafsa tells me you are healing well, the sheikh said. I am heartened to see you risen.
Oates grunted a laugh and cocked his head at the stairs. Not quite.
Neither are you dead. Be grateful for this blessing.
Grateful to you, Oates said, remembering to show some of the courtesy the Zahrasins prized. I know you gave up the bedchamber for me, and that Hafsa is your physician.
Physician,
Tarif corrected, without a hint of mockery.
That, Oates said, pointing at nothing.
Like courtesy, it wasn't a word much heard in the lots.
You'll have them both back soon. I'll be hale again before another week's turn. Ain't that right, Murrow?
But the boy was fixated on the eagle and paid him no mind. Oates shrugged.
It'll be soon.
Tarif shifted his weight.
You are what is named in your tongue, a thrice blood?
Oates peered up at the man, a bit puzzled at the question.
Uh-huh.
Thrice is a way of denoting three instances of a thing.
Reckon so.
I hope I do not give offense when I say this is an odd name.
No, Oates said. Got three kinds of blood in me. Frail, thick, and mongrel.
Yes, but half-orc blood is already that of human and orc. Surely you remain a product of two, orc and man, only in different measures.
Oates sent a hand running over his bare scalp.
Well, I weren't there when they gave name to it, but I wager whoever it was figured mongrel blood is its own beast.
Tarif smoothed both sides of his mustachios with the back of a finger in two deft strokes.
I see.
Been bothering you a while, has it?
Oates asked, grinning.
Yes, Tarif admitted, returning the smile. Thank you.
Oates nodded. Any news on Hisparatha?
They continue to send heralds with entreaties that we abandon this place. No, entreaties is not true. Their words became threats long ago. All offers of mercy for our renewed fealty have been withdrawn. We see more of their scouts now. With the nights warming and the days returning too hot, I foresee the first of their armies before two moons turn.
Oates knew better than to ask if he was prepared for that arrival. The Zahracenes had been storing provisions all autumn. Fetch had made sure that the Castile's larders, armories, and powder stores were filled, using the coin from the pit to buy from Tradrian merchants. The goods were brought by ship to Salduba, the port protected by Mongrel's Cradle, then hauled north in caravans. With its high walls and guns, to say nothing of the several thousand seasoned Zahracene warriors they sheltered, the Castile would be an ass-fucking nightmare for Hisparatha to take by force. Didn't mean they wouldn't try.
You ever regret siding with us, Sheikh?
Oates asked. He didn't know if the question was courteous, but it was an earnest one. Tarif's hawkish face became a mask of consideration. At last, he answered.
My people know what it is to be mastered by a conqueror. The Tyrkanian Empire came to our mountains and claimed them with this sword. We became slaves in our own land, then warriors for our new masters. I would not have my people be the sword that falls on another again. For that I would regret.
Tarif regarded his bird of prey for a moment and stroked its breast. He looked to Murrow.
Did you see how I touched him? Gentle. Do you think you can do it so?
Murrow nodded. Slowly, Tarif lowered his arm so that the eagle was within the boy's reach. Oates saw Murrow's excitement, his limitations, would get the better of him. He caught the boy's hand before it reached the bird and steadied it, guided it once down the fluffy breast. Murrow was awed, flinching a little when the eagle twitched a wing in response.
Thank him, Oates prompted as Tarif straightened.
Thank you, Murrow said.
The Sheikh gave a small bow. He looked at Oates.
And if I may offer some words to you. Three times in life I have been wounded in battle to the precipice of death. Never was my recovery quickened by haste.
Oates accepted that with a grunt. Just don't like being useless, is all. Tarif's gaze shifted briefly to Murrow.
If you believe yourself to be useless, perhaps we should have Hafsa check your sight.
With a parting smile for them both and a final bow, the man turned to go.
Sheikh, Oates called. You nearly been killed three times?
Tarif winked.
Thrice,
yes.
As soon as the bird was lost from view, Murrow began tugging at Oates's arm.
Bears and mountains! Play bears and mountains, Oates!
Hell, the boy was actually managing to budge him.
Murrow, I can't.
Bears and mountains!
Not today, Oates said, freeing himself from the boy's grip as gently as he could.
Murrow let out a howl of frustration. It took some time to calm him, but Oates was able to convince him to sit down once more. He didn't have a kerchief, so he wiped the boy's tears and dripping nose with his hand.
"I'm hurt, Murrow," he said. "And I'm angry about it, too. Wish I could lift you up and play. In earnest, I do. But it's going to be a while before I can."
"Tomorrow?"
"Not tomorrow," Murrow sniffed.
"Because you hurt?"
"Yes. But Tarif is right. We need to be glad I ain't hurt worse. I'm going to be better, and that don't always happen. Sometimes folk get hurt and they never heal."
"Me?"
"You?" Murrow touched above his right ear. The hair there didn't grow in fully, a crescent marking the dent in his skull.
"I hurt. Ever heal. Ever."
Oates stilled. "Do you remember how that happened?"
"Yes."
"How?"
"Bad mule."
Oates tried to let his breath of relief out slowly as he put an arm around the boy and pulled him close.
"That's right. Bad mule."
The room, the bed, two halves of the same prison for weeks. Tonight, a welcome sanctuary. Oates had yearned for them during the arduous climb up the stairs. By the time the Zahracenes half carried him over the threshold, it was full dark. At least they hadn't needed a litter. Thistle saw him settled before taking Murrow to their chambers. Alone, Oates gave himself to the floodwaters of exhaustion. His body was done in, but his mind rebelled. Oates's eyes snapped open. It was Sancho who made up the story about the mule. 4 years after Creep's threat, the whoremaster had come to the kiln on a nag, alone and in desperate need to speak to the chief. The claymaster, not fetching. Oates could live 100 years and be a drooling dotard and never switch those two in his memories. Wasn't long before the claymaster called Oates into his solar and ordered him to ride back to the brothel with Sancho. The fat fuck was sweating more than usual and wouldn't look at Oates directly. They were barely free from the kiln's shadow when Sancho reined up and spewed a confession. Murrow had been hurt, but it wasn't he who had done it, he swore. Oates had never heard a man speak so quickly. He'd come to deliver the news to Creep and Oates personally, prove he was innocent. Creep was dead by then, fulfilled his oath against an Ulyud the year before. But Oates had seasoned, and he didn't smell a lie on the whoremaster. His nose proved right. Sancho hadn't hurt the boy. But neither had a damn mule. The whores had the guilty chained up in the brothel's wine cellar. Oates could still see that mongrel's face, every detail, though the light from the candles had been poor. That one broken fang, the unhealthy yellow stain in his callous eyes. He was a big son of a thick, the scars over his Cauldron Brotherhood tattoos marking him a nomad. Sancho had laced his wine with Gon, chained him once he was witless. To be certain this wasn't a ruse put on by the whoremonger to save his hide, Oates made sure the captive free rider was clear-headed before questioning him. He gave his name as Lucan, said he'd left his hoof name behind when he was ousted from the Brotherhood for fucking the chief's bed warmer, droned out the whole damn story. Oates heard little of it. He let the mongrel talk, let him think the gray bastard standing before him was his way out of the chains. Words spoken in a brothel cellar traversed the years and echoed in Bermudo's bedchamber.
"Why'd you hurt the boy?"
Oates's jaw was clenched, then and now.
"Caught him going through my saddlebag. Thieving."
Oates had brought the bag down with him. It had dangled in his hand, adding to the myth that Lucan was about to be on his way. Reaching beneath the flap, Oates drew out the doll made of straw and old cloth.
This is his giant. Giants live in caves. Saddlebags make good caves.
Lucan barely glanced at the doll. He'd fucking shrugged.
Only struck him once.
His skull's caved. Blood in his ears. He's dying.
Well, they are frails.
Oates swallowed, set the saddlebag down, tucked the doll beneath his brigand, above his heart. He was a long time in that cellar. When he emerged, stained and sticky, the whores all offered to bathe him, reward him. After what he'd done to Lucan, Oates had no stomach for such temptation. Oates squirmed in the bed, roiling in the linens, the recollection. His fever was back, though the monstrous visions were not phantoms born from a heated brain. He'd done it, mauled that mongrel, barehanded and frothing. Made sure he was a long time dying. He was enraged, but not berserk, wielding his wrath like a weapon. Vengeance required control, else Lucan would have been dead by the same single blow he'd given Murrow. A thoughtless, uncaring, easy blow. There was nothing easy about the ways Oates sent Lucan to the hells, and he created a fresh one in the doing. Bathed in sweat, the bedclothes clinging to him, Oates returned to that cellar. He drifted in and out of sleep, but dreaming or awake, he was there. At last he broke free, sat up with a jerk. His breathing filled the room. Someone else was there, too. He heard them moving in response to his waking. Hafsa had said he no longer needed watching at night, but must have returned to the practice knowing the day would tax him. He wasn't certain who it was, hoped it wasn't Thistle. No, the shadow was too big. One of the physician's assistants.
"Is there water?"
Oates croaked in the dark. He heard the pitcher fill a cup, which was guided into his hands. He took a drink.
"Thank you."
"It is my pleasure, friend Oates."
Oates froze. He knew that voice. The fat lamp on the trestle sprang to life. The little flame glinted in Crafty's golden smile.
"I hear you have been looking for me."
Chapter 10. Oates set the cup aside.
"It is not poisoned,"
Crafty told him, smile steady as a hog's piss stream.
"Didn't figure it was," Oates replied. He swung his legs over the bedside. "Hand me my breeches."
The portly wizard glanced about the room, found the garment on the back of a chair.
"Took your damn time," Oates groused.
"Truly, it is a large chamber."
"You know that ain't what I mean."
Crafty only chuckled. Flinching, trying not to hiss against the pain, Oates got his legs into the breeches. He went to stand so he could pull them up over his ass, but only lifted a cunt hair before falling back. Crafty stood regarding him patiently, his pudgy, ring-laden fingers knitted and resting against his paunch.
"Help me here," Oates said.
"Of course,"
Crafty replied, and moved smoothly to stand in front of him.
"How may I best assist?"
"Just stand firm, offer an arm, and keep weighing a heap."
"I can do that."
Oates took hold of Crafty's hooked arm and pulled himself off the bed. The wizard did more than his share of the work, stronger than his fleshy body would attest. Once steady, Oates gestured at the chairs by the cold fireplace. He made his way over on his own shuffling power and sat. Crafty lowered himself opposite and pointed at the stack of prepared kindling.
"Shall I light this?"
Oates shook his head. He was still sweaty and uncomfortable from the bed. Bermudo's hearthside chairs were large and cushioned, coaxing Oates to lay his head back for a moment. He closed his eyes and breathed deeply.
I'd offer you wine, but my physician doesn't allow me any.
It is to keep your blood from thinning. And the Zachasines hold abstemious beliefs.
Eyes still closed, Oates grunted.
Forgot how backy you talk.
Cunting swaddleheads reckon the milk of the grape-swollen teats makes fucking devils take up residence in a mongrel's fucking headbone,
Crafty announced, in the worst impression of a hoof rider Oates had ever heard.
Oh, hells, Oates said, laughing. Why don't you stick to what you're best at and use your damn sorcery to turn some water into the milk of grape's swollen teats?
I fear going against the instructions of your physician would belie my assertion that I am not here to harm you.
Oates opened his eyes. I ain't afraid of you, Crafty.
It pleases me to hear it, the wizard said, with his customary smile. Though I did not believe you were. Indeed, sending word that you wish to speak points otherwise. It intimates so little fear, in truth, that it was I who feared.
Worried Jack and Fetch were going to be leaping from under the bed?
Crafty looked wistfully about the room.
I confess not to have imagined this as the setting of an ambush.
Oates snorted. So that's why you took a damn pig's ear.
He'd figured Crafty would think it was a trap and be cautious. It was telling that he'd waited until Oates was half dead and isolated before showing himself.
It took some time for your clever messages to reach my ears, Crafty said. After I had a long way to journey.
Oates didn't respond. He believed only half that statement. The wizard had ears everywhere, he'd wagered. As to his long journey, that could also have been hog shit. But Oates was careful not to ask where he'd been. He knew better than to match wits with Crafty. Besides, Oates wasn't interested in his hiding holes.
Yet here I am at last, Crafty said, raising his hands. Eva, the whore you have been so desperate to find.
Oates felt a mote of pride. It had worked. Perhaps he'd never truly believed it would. Jackal had scoured half the earth and been unable to run Crafty down. Oates knew he'd have no chance himself, even if he'd been willing to abandon his hoof and his chief to go on the hunt. The only hope of finding the wizard was if Crafty wanted to be found. So, Oates had put word out with anyone and everyone, using Eva's name as his quarry. Eva, a woman who could never be found. She'd been executed not far from where Oates now sat by order of the man who once occupied this very room, along with the rest of Riccio's whores. Eva, a woman Crafty had once lied about fucking on the night that he, Oates, Jackal, and Fetch had fled Sancho's brothel. Fetch had been suspicious, as always, and right to be. All Oates had done was wonder about Crafty betting a woman since he'd reckoned him backy. They'd shared a fool-ass jest. Any ass in the night, and laughed about it for half the ride to Strava. It was all Oates could fathom might summon the wizard, yet hide who he was really looking for. The scheme had nearly been the hog that gored him. The chief caught wind of it. If she hadn't mistaken the recipient of the message for Jrika. Oates didn't know what Fetching would have done if she'd discovered his true intent. She'd come so close and still erred. Jackal, too. They'd had the same clues Crafty did, yet missed the mark. The reason hurt to dwell upon. It was unthinkable what Oates was doing. So unthinkable, it had rendered his siblings blind.
You ain't changed any, Oates said, stating a fact.
Over 2 years since he'd seen Crafty, but the wizard retained his weight, his easy smile. His desert robes were still festooned with rich and varied sashes, his head still topped by an immaculate turban.
It pains me I cannot say the same of you, friend Oates.
Times haven't been kind since the kiln fell, and fuck you for that.
Crafty offered no apology, but neither did he gloat. His face remained carefully guileless.
If it is not to seek revenge, perhaps you would tell me why you sought my presence.
You're the cleverest son of a thick I ever knew, Oates replied. Don't sell me you ain't worked it out.
I must not hold my intelligence as high as you.
Oates gave a sigh with a growl wrapped inside. I'm too damn tired, too damn hurt for games, Crafty.
The wizard leaned forward, smile still affixed.
Then let us not play any. Speak your reasons. Don't sell to me that any amount of wounds have rendered you too weak to give your desires voice.
I want the plague.
Not something often uttered on this earth.
Don't you mock me!
Oates stilled, forced himself not to turn toward the door. Thankfully, no one entered the room to see what had caused his outburst. He needed to get his temper wrangled or risk waking the entire keep. Crafty's face fell, and he held up a contrite hand.
Forgive me. Yes, you are right. This is not a jesting matter. Yet I cannot do this. Hisparta's plague is a work of sorcery both slippery and cumbersome. Mastery of it is perilous. It would doubtless resist me as it has the tines.
Liar. You moved it from the claymaster to me, then tossed it into Wily like a pair of spare breeches into a saddlebag. You can move it again. I want it out of Warbler, out of Wily. The elves may not be able to wrangle it, but I know you can. Easily, too, I'd wager. You broke the gray bastards from me to bear it. So I'm giving you the chance to have what you fucking want.
I am curious what you believe that is.
Thought we agreed. No games.
Crafty stroked the arms of his chair, the motion lighthearted.
The throne of Hisparta, yes? For that was my aim. Then.
Oates felt a stir of alarm.
You don't... That can't have changed.
If your desire is to mount a hog and you succeed, you may call yourself satisfied. However, if your desire is to ride a far distance, then there is more that must be done. If the hog will not be tamed, there are other ways to reach your destination. Slower, perhaps, but much ground can be covered in 2 years, even without strong hoofs.
Oates shook his head. I ain't met a mongrel yet that would walk when he could ride. You may not have been sitting idle and waggling your cod, but that don't mean your old plans are useless.
My old plans required the orcs invade Grand Hisparta so that I and the new plague-bearer could arrive as savior. The orcs will not stir themselves again for some time, longer than I can wait.
So don't be Hisparta's savior. Be its damn conqueror.
Crafty's smile broadened. He toyed with the single braid of beard dangling from his chin.
I believed you to be the gentlest of your brethren, friend Oates. Such a proposal sounds more in the voice of dread fetching. She may not be under the bed, but I wonder if she is not hidden beneath your tongue.
She don't know that I'm talking to you. We wouldn't be talking if she did. Were she here, you'd be dead, and there ain't no sorcery you got that would save you, and that's earnest.
Asilia Kaga Arku,
Crafty said. His elvish, like his Hispartan, was accented, but Oates thought he heard a note of sadness in the words. Ruin made flesh. The wizard had just revealed he knew not only about the chief's new power, but also its source. He did have ears everywhere. Oates grimaced, shifting in the chair to make it seem it was his wounds that disturbed him.
The chief's got no notion to have you for an ally, Crafty. However the fuck you think I sound, these words are mine. I want that filthy shit out of the two that are cursed to carry it in my stead. An old man and a little boy. I'm asking you to finish what you started, and I don't give a heap of hog shit whether that fits into your plans or not.
And he Sparta's imminent invasion of the Lots? Crafty posed. Am I to believe such impending peril does not weigh your desire to possess the plague, to deliver a potent weapon to Fetching's war?
All I care about is that others ain't suffering on account of me.
Crafty studied him for a moment. I believe this, yet it is not wholly the truth. She will wield you against them, friend Oates.
I'll be fighting the Frails anyway. What does it matter?
Crafty stood, paced away from the fireplace. His back was turned when next he spoke.
Truly, for the cleverest son of a thief you have ever known, you must think me a fool.
The wizard whirled before Oates could respond, eyes bright with a wild amusement.
Your brother is the arm of Atukan, your sister an Uhul, and you would bid me make you master of a magic so potent that even the orcs fear its bearer? Shall I hand the three of you the known world?
We don't want the fucking world, just the Lots. Just our home.
And once you have it?
We live in peace.
Crafty gave him a pitying look. He returned to his chair. Oates struggled to look at him squarely.
Do you see? The wizard said. Even one with a heart as great as yours cannot speak those words and believe them. Empires expand, friend Oates. In this you must believe me, for I am an instrument of that growth. Would I be here if Tyrkania did not wish to consume Hisparta? Would we be speaking if the sultans did not cast their eyes westward and hunger for their borders to reach the Titan's ocean? I tell you, no.
Oates set his jaw. That would be on your head, then. Once they have Hisparta, if your masters need Ulwandulas too...
Fetching will allow my rule?
Crafty said, cutting him off.
Truly, she will trust her neighboring mongrel leader to the north, will purge herself of the venom of grudges past. Did you not say she will never have me as ally?
Oates clenched his fist, thumped it against the arm of the chair.
Whatever grudges she bears, you fucking earned them.
The very reason I am not eager to strengthen her further.
Oates hauled his aching bulk forward.
One way to see it. The other is that you're strengthening someone who could help keep her from your throat.
Betrayal does not suit you, my thrice friend.
I ain't said a word about betrayal, Oates said, anger flaring. That's your trade, and I'll watch your hands for knives the rest of my life. But you help me now, I can help you later. Convince the chief to leave you be so long as you never come south. She'll be more apt to hear with the war won, and you part of the reason why.
And if my masters deign I must come south?
Then I'll be there standing with my brethren, ready to shove the plague down the throats of every swaddlehead that comes with you.
Crafty spread his hands.
Honesty leads us to an impasse.
Then I'll ask you for the same. Tell me, truthfully, for fucking once in your life, does Tyrkania want the Lots?
At present, no.
Oates stared hard at the wizard for a long span.
Fuck. You look and sound same as ever.
You were hoping my nose would change color when I speak truth?
I was hoping to get the same feeling in my gut I get when speaking with my sworn brethren. I was hoping to see a fellow bastard in front of me, not a fork-tongued half-orc with the black womb's arm up his ass.
Crafty's brow knitted, hearing that. Just slightly. It was brief, but it was there. Pain. Oates refused to chew on what was likely nothing but the wizard's constant mummery.
"Would you bring that cup over?" he asked.
Crafty rose and retrieved the vessel, filled it from the pitcher before returning to the hearth. Oates took the cup, sipped. It was wine. The surprise forced a small measure to go down wrong. Oates coughed the wine out of his lungs.
"Could have fucking warned me," he growled, clearing the burn from his throat.
"I am sorry," Crafty replied quietly.
Oates glared at the wizard and drank again. Still wine. Good wine. It was the first he'd had since before leaving the pit for Ellerina. Or had he had some at the heap when his wounds were being stitched? Hells, he couldn't remember. However long and whatever Hafsa might have thought, in this moment it was the cure to every cut, stab, ache, and fever in the world. Crafty raised a cautioning hand toward the cup.
"Please, go slowly."
Yielding to good sense, Oates kept himself from draining the cup. Crafty did not let the silence last long.
"I feel you should know. Were I willing to grant you what you ask? Still, I could not. Placing the current vessel..."
"Wily," Oates snapped.
"Placing Wily in the domain of the Tynes put him beyond my reach. I cannot intrude upon Dogfall."
"Hog shit. Jackal did. Whatever he learned hunting you in the east, I reckon you know better, else he'd have caught you. Don't throw a lasso looking to catch a pardon from me."
Oates took another drink.
"You've said why you won't help. Spitting on your iron to ease the ass-fucking ain't going to make me thank you for it."
"Perhaps you would thank me for not killing you."
Oates threw the cup into the fireplace and sat forward.
"Told you. I ain't fucking afraid of you. It don't take a wizard to kill me, condition I'm in. That little Zahrasine physician could smother me with a rag for all the strength I got. And have an easy time of it, too. Queer thing about being this weak, I don't fear anyone to harm me, 'cause everyone can. So fuck your threats and your sorcery. And fuck you."
Crafty sighed and looked away.
"You will not grant me pardon, but I ask for it all the same. You mistake my words. They were not meant in threat. It is the very weakness you mention that would slay you were I to be so cruel as to grant you the plague. Wounded as you are, you could not bear it. You would only perish."
"So the fuck be it," Oates said through gritted teeth. "So long as it's out of Wily."
"No."
"Why, damn it? Dead, I'm no threat to you. Fetch wouldn't be stronger, wouldn't have a weapon."
"And Moro wouldn't have a..."
"Don't you say his name!"
Oates shot to his feet. His head, bewildered at the sudden change in height, contrived to bring him back down. Swaying, Oates toppled. Crafty caught him, strained beneath his weight, and wrestled it into the chair. Oates felt a cup pressed into his hand.
"Water," Crafty said.
It took some time for Oates to be steady enough to drink. Crafty hovered over him.
"Better?"
Oates nodded, relinquished the cup, not trusting his grip. Crafty sat down once more.
"It took courage to summon me to you, to defy the will of your chief and risk the trust of your brethren. I wish you to know this truth does not escape me. So I will attempt similar courage and risk a promise. If ever there comes a time when it is safe for me to grant your request, I vow to do so. But I grieve to say it, that time is not now."
Feeling dull, head lolled on the chair back, Oates could only stare at the duplicitous wizard. He was too damn feeble for the easily spilled lies to birth even an ember of anger.
"I'm going to kill you for what you've done. One day, I'm going to kill you."
I fear you will have to fight Jackal and Fetching for the privilege, Crafty replied.
A bitter chuckle rose from the distant cavern of Oates's chest. Not long ago, that wouldn't have seemed any chore at all. He would have knocked their heads together and done as he pleased. Not anymore. Crafty rose and carefully set the cup on the arm of Oates's chair.
Since it is not a contest I wish to foment or witness, I must go, lest sunup and your hot-blooded siblings find me here.
That made Oates frown. His head was muzzy, but he could have sworn the wizard said, Sunup. Jackal and Fetch.
We'll be here at dawn,
Craft said, cutting him off with a smile. He made a grand, swooping gesture with his hand.
Descending from the morning sky, frustrated by their failure to find what they sought.
How do you know?
That they did not find Surly Jrika?
Crafty winked.
Oh, because I have her.
Chapter 11. Oates didn't know much about carpentry. He wasn't certain what wood the campaign table in Bermudo's solar was made from, didn't know if it was expertly joined, or if the intricate carvings were done with skill. He did know it was a monstrous and heavy piece. Likely took half a dozen men to carry it into the room, the captain clucking over its worth as they labored. The chief snapped the table in half with a single downward blow. Oates had made a silent wager she would. She'd been staring at its surface for too long, thinking, seething. Alamra startled at the sudden violence.
My men standing sentry will be punished, Tarif declared. Allowing an intruder into the walls is shameful, to say nothing of one reaching the keep, only to leave unnoticed.
May as well blame them for not seeing the wind, Jackal told him, arms crossed as he leaned against the wall. Crafty is well named. Believe me, there was nothing your men could have done. Tarif continued to look embarrassed. Fetch, Jackal said, prodding her to pardon the man. Ignoring him, the chief looked up from the collapsed table and set her eyes on Oates. Of the five of them, he was the only one seated.
He said he'd be back to trade for her? Fetch asked.
Oates nodded. He figured she'd struggled to listen during his account. Hells, he could almost hear the roar of her blood. It must have nearly deafened her.
When? Where?
Didn't say, Oates replied. And not for what, either, Jackal put in, heading off the chief's next question. It was an attempt to redirect some of her ire, Oates knew, but it was hard to be grateful. Fetch wasn't the only one angry. Oates would have thrown his chair at her if he didn't need it to sit upon, a fact that boiled his guts further. He said she was safe, Oates repeated, refusing to throw his words in place of the furniture. That she was unharmed. Fetching scoffed.
And you believe him?
I believe Jrika is damn hard to harm, Oates replied, teeth clenched. What about Hood? Jackal asked. Confused, Oates shot him a look. Hood? Jackal hesitated, got that sheepish look he always did when he'd been caught at some mischief or said something he regretted. His eyes darted to Fetch.
Hoodwink was with her,
she said, pacing away from the table's remains. Where?
Nowhere.
Damn it, Issa!
Oates allowed his voice to rise, but kept his body in the chair. She spun on him, angry at his outburst, at the use of her name. Oates met her burning stare and didn't blink. She cooled before he did, took a breath. Her gaze flicked to Tarif, then to Alamra. Wondering if she could trust them, Oates realized. Hells. Fetch took another breath, this one deeper, resolved. Oates waited to see who would answer, the chief or...
Jrika was nowhere because she was everywhere, Fetching said. She told me that Bellico did not allow her to leave Ulwandulas, that he made it painful if she tried. I figured Zirko knew that, and if he sought for her, he'd send hunters to all the likely spots. That limited our choices. So we broadened them the only way we could, by keeping her on the move. No one can find Hoodwink when he doesn't want to be found, especially if he's free to roam. No mongrel knows the lots better. Even I didn't know where they were for most of the winter. Just messages that they were still out there, alive and undiscovered.
What manner of messages? Tarif asked.
Hood would kill us both if I revealed that, Fetch replied.
Oates heard in her voice that she wasn't jesting. For all her might, she believed that the pale mongrel could find a way to kill her if he chose to. Oates couldn't convince himself she was wrong.
It proved to be the right course, Fetch went on. You weren't the only one to have a halfling embedded close, Oates. I got word that warriors like Barsius were showing up all over. At the Bone Smilers, the strongholds of the other mongrel chiefs. Hells, even Colquhoun reported waddlers tracking the fangs. Always in the guise of allies, helping us prepare for the coming war at the orders of the Hero Father. And I couldn't tell the chiefs to run them off. We asked for... I forced Strava's aid. Scorning it now would not strengthen the Hoofmaster's trust in me.
The confession caused her to falter. Eyes lowering, she slipped into a brood. Alamra pulled her out of it.
May I ask, Chief, why you have not made good on your threat? You proposed Zhrika, or rather the god to whom she acts as vessel, would lay Strava low if the Hero Father Zirko pursued his desire to reclaim her. If you knew he flaunted your warning, why show restraint?
I should make him rue the day, Fetch replied,
a small smile cracking her grim face. Alamra rarely betrayed her feelings, but the use of her hoof name still made her brow wrinkle. She hadn't completely accepted it, though it was fitting, for the Castile had come to regret ever letting her within its walls. Still, it hadn't stuck. Alamra was, what had Sluggard called her? Self-possessed. Some backy word used in civilization, Oates reckoned. But self-possessed made an even worse hoof name than Rue the Day, so the chief's suggestion had won out. Still, the beautiful, barely mongrel woman didn't know how lucky she got, in truth. Polecat had suggested they name her Wet Dream. Fetch shook her head.
It's not my threat to make good. It's Zhrika's. That choice would be hers if it came to it. But even she doesn't know what a clash between Zirko and Bellico would bring. The destruction of Strava? More? It wasn't something either of us wanted to find out, and we wagered Zirko wouldn't either.
But he called your bluff. Oates had tried to keep that from coming out so hateful, and failed.
He did, Fetch replied, temper wrangled. But he didn't find her. We were winning the chase. Until...
Fucking crafty, Jackal said. His body looked relaxed, but Oates saw the tension in his jaw. He wasn't just trying to absolve Tarif of letting Crafty slip through. Fetch noticed, too.
Sheikh, we're going to need a detailed report of last night's watch, and a sweep of the Castile. It's doubtful Crafty left any sign or trail, but we'd be fools not to look.
It will be done, Tarif said.
Alamra, I need birds sent to Polecat, Shed.